this talk's been kind of cooking in my head for a while, and I'm dreaming a little bit out loud. But the other thing I've got to ask for a little bit of forgiveness, you know when you go to a new church, sometimes they give you this survey thing to figure out what your spiritual gifts are? And mine and my husband's both come out that we're prophets, which means we tell you what to do and we're right. So apologies if I sound a little bit too arrogant. So what I'll cover is where we are energy-wise, and I'm going to limit my perspective to the U.S. Terry covered the whole world. I'm going to stick with the U.S. Where we might go and why I'd like to get there and how we would get there, we're looking at pretty much four of the major options for reducing our greedy slurping up of all the energy in the world. And then cover a little bit of objections and problems there might be with that idea. Okay, so this is our present electricity fuel mix. And if you remember enough from Terry Gray's talk, he talked about total energy, and a big piece of that is transportation. So that's not here. This is just electricity. So, and Ian and I agreed that if I put, what would that be, terawatts, that you wouldn't know what it meant. So 10 to the 15th watt hours. Energy comes in watt hours. Power is an instantaneous measure, and that comes in watts. So I took the 4.05 times 10 to the 15 watt hours and divided by 8,760 hours in a year to come up with an average of 463 gigawatts, 463 times 10 to the ninth watts of total electric generating capacity on average in the U.S. And it is an average because, among other things, we generate more than we need, a little bit. We have something called spinning reserve in case after the Super Bowl game is over, you guys all rush out and turn on your kettles or something, and that causes a surge. We've got to be ready to handle that. And then also, not all generators generate all the time, particularly with renewables. So that's an average over a year. We don't use that all the time. It goes up and down. Okay, so our present electricity fuel mix is still mostly coal. That's the blue one. And then the red one is natural gas. And if I'd shown this to you 3 years ago, coal would have been 50%. And what would have been subtracted is the natural gas. And that difference is entirely due to fracking. The price of natural gas went through the floor, and electric generating companies have been building natural gas plants rapidly. The 19% is nuclear. That's been nearly constant since Limerick came online. When would that be? Like 1990. We haven't built a new nuclear plant in that time. And then the other thing that's kind of significant here is that the other renewable slice is now 5%. Okay, and petrol means gasoline, which mostly means diesel. We use very little liquid fossil fuel in the making of electricity. Okay, well, take that 5% on this slide and blow it up. Okay, our total annual renewable energy generation in this country in 2012 was 495 times 10 to the 12th watt hours, or an average of 56.5 gigawatts of total capacity. Okay, so we have about 56 gigawatts of capacity in renewables, and we have something slightly less than 10 times that in overall capacity.
What's the difference between the hydro
on this one and the hydro on? Nothing, but the pie is 100% of renewables, whereas this one is 100% of everything. Okay, so hydro dominates. And the next one, the next big piece, is wind. So practically 30% of our renewable energy this past year came from wind power. The next big piece is biomass. That is largely burning trees and grass and that sort of stuff for making hot water for steam for generation. largely. A little bit of it is capturing of methane from landfills, and then again burning that to turn into steam for hot water, or just turning turbines, because you can do that with natural gas. And the most important thing about this pie chart is that you can actually see the solar electric generation contribution. And that's what happened in 2012. We suddenly got enough PV that we can actually put it on a chart instead of just a little sliver that says other. Okay. And this geothermal here is geothermal to electricity, which doesn't work just anywhere. It's where the ground is hot enough that you can run water down and up and get it into steam. Okay. The solar, I should have checked on this, I think is all electric. I don't think it's solar hot water, but I'm not absolutely sure about that. Okay, so where could we go? Now think back to that first circle. And this is where are we, where could we be in 2050? I didn't put a year on it. Okay. We could fairly easily generate 50% of our energy from renewables. Knock our coal contribution down to 15% from something close to 40%. And then I left the nuclear alone. Don't turn that off. And let the natural gas still be there. So that upper right hand of the pie chart is the fossil fuels. And then everything else there, for the most part, is renewable. Petroleum is on there, but there's no slice. Okay, no petroleum is being burned for electricity. How do we get there? Well, what I didn't show is this circle has to represent about half of the energy we use now, or perhaps half of the total power that we might generate. Okay. And then another thing I didn't do, which had been what I would have harped on a few years ago, is to say double the nuclear and delete all the fossil, which you still could do. So it's not too hard to double the nuclear. But I'm afraid that Japan's earthquake has made that probably just not a political possibility. Okay, so how do we get there? We cut demand by 50%, as I said, primarily in building use, primarily in HVAC, HVAC, and also partly lighting. HVAC is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So heating, making the world cooler or hotter to make us comfortable. Continue increasing the wind and solar. If we keep going at the rate we've been going, we won't have any trouble with this. Continue decommissioning old coal. You only have to visit a Sierra Club website to see how well this is going so far. We're not having any trouble with that, mostly because EPA regs are making old coal real expensive. So, can we get there? Particularly, can we cut demand by 50%? This is a Energy Information System, EIA, it's a U.S. data, energy data gathering thing, graph of the change in demand. Okay, it's not the actual usage, it's the rate of change of demand over the past, well, since 1950. So you'll see that all of those numbers are above zero. So back in 1950, the rate of change of demand was increasing at the rate of something like 10% a year. But what happens when you get to 2011? In 2011, this is a three-year average, so all the way back to maybe 2009, we started using or demanding less energy in that year than we did before. So all of the energy conservation things that the present administration started pushing were working. It became popular to start reducing the amount of energy we were using. Partly that was because you had a large expanse in the cost of energy. Natural gas hadn't started the fracking thing yet. Natural gas was getting expensive. And then partly a lot of federal encouragement of conservation programs. Now, from the line, the vertical line that says 2011, onwards, the blue or dark line is a hypothesis. It is not data. Okay. So if you take that away, if this is a light, yes. If you take away from this peak all that from there on, and then try redrawing the trend line, if you left it to be, I'd make it linear and keep going. Now, EIA knows all sorts of things I don't and thinks that the economy will keep growing and things like that. But why not? What have we got to keep us from keep going where we're going? Why can't we continue to reduce demand? Well, to get where we're going, some of the things we did were tax credits and other incentives for the kinds of things that reduce demand. An awful lot of the stimulus money went into advancing technology, R&D dollars into new light bulbs, into new ground source heat pumps, into higher efficiency appliances, and then tax credits or rewards for implementing those things, for buying Energy Star devices, for putting in energy conserving blinds, insulation in your windows, so on and so forth. And that's working. Another big thing is to do some way for the utilities to make money off this. Because needless to say, if the demand goes down, they sell less electricity, they make less money. But at least one of the utilities in Kansas has figured out how to do this. They say, look, we'll come into your house and we'll do an energy audit and we'll tell you what kind of things you need to do to save energy. And we'll figure out what rate of energy you're going to save. And we'll charge you for that energy you don't use, as though you were using it, and use that money to pay for the changes to your house. So we'll put in the insulation, we'll redo the caulking, we'll change your windows, and you're going to pay for that on your electric bill. So maybe for the next 10 years, you won't see the drop in your electric bill, but you will see the drop in demand, and after you've paid for these retrofits, with money you were going to spend anyway, right, then your bill will be lower. And this has worked really, really well, and the utility still makes money. So that's not allowed everywhere, oddly enough. Regulation doesn't always permit it. But that's a very good way to advance conservation. Another good way to do it is to raise electricity prices. The average across the country is about 10 cents a kilowatt hour. In California, it can be in some places over 20 cents a kilowatt hour, some places in times, because they have time of day dependent rates. In Hawaii, it's well over 20 cents a kilowatt hour. In the Northeast, it's pretty high also, though not quite that high. On the other hand, I think in this general region where a lot of the money, a lot of the power comes from hydro, from the TVA, I think it's very low, but I don't know for sure. But at any rate, if you start penalizing greenhouse gases in some way, whether it's cap and trade or a carbon tax or something, right now it's the utilities are being required to put in more filtration systems to catch more of the pollutants, not carbon dioxide, but everything else. And that costs money and the rates go up. And when the rates go up, we start using less electricity. So that helps. Okay? The talk Terry gave yesterday noted that the U.S. uses over three times the global average energy per person per year. Okay? And half of that energy, because I said that's everything, that includes transportation. So half of that three times is electricity. Japan has at least the same lifestyle as we do, and it's pretty close to the global average number. It's a little bit higher, but not much. Why can't we get there? It ought to be possible. All right, the other thing to do is to change the production mix. So that means I've got to add capacity or shut down coal plants and bring on other plants. So drivers for capacity additions, and these are now. This is why, what's causing the utilities presently to build new power plants. One is they're pulling off old coal plants because it's not cost effective to retrofit them to meet EPA regs. For sulfur, for nitrogen oxides, for mercury, you name it. Okay, and those EPA regs are what's driving that. Shut down coal, bring on at least natural gas and or wind. It's the economical choice. Renewable portfolio standards. I think about 29 states have some form of RPS. And those vary. But most of them run along the lines of 20% of your generation will come from renewable energy by 2020. Colorado just raised theirs this year. I think Minnesota did too because they met the previous one. There's some states are getting those attacked and tried to remove, but most utilities aren't complaining. The old stuff is expensive anyhow. But what that does is it helps to encourage the utilities to change their generation mix. Okay. Except for natural gas, wind is the lowest cost new thing that you can generate. Okay. So if I'm going to build new plants, I'm going to build wind and natural gas because that's where I'm going to make the most money. Okay. Fracking is has driven down gas prices. The general feeling is they will not stay there. They're really almost too low to be sustainable at this point. But they're not, I don't think, at least not soon, going to rise back into that highly volatile and very expensive place they were back in 2008. Okay. The other thing that drives capacity additions is very low-cost photovoltaics, which from here on out I'll call PV. It means taking the sun and turning it into electricity. China has been making way more panels than anybody needs, so the price has gone through the floor, and that makes lots of people put it up. The RPSs, some of those have what are called solar carve-outs. Said 20% of your energy must come from renewable energy by 2020, and 5% must be solar. Otherwise, I don't think utilities would install PV because it isn't cost-effective, but the RPSs make them. All right, so here's where we've been adding new capacity since 2000. This is data from Lawrence Berkeley does this every year. The each bar is what was added this year. Okay, so this year in 2012, so much coal, so much natural gas, other renewables, mostly PV, but not all biomass is in there. And then the big green one is wind. This is the first year where the amount of wind energy added exceeded the amount of natural gas added. Okay. And this line is wind as a percent of total. So this isn't a new development since 2006. Get back here. There. We've been building lots of new wind. So DOE to 20% wind, this was their, back in 2006 they were asked, DOE was tasked with the job of figuring out how we might get to 20% wind generation by 2030. And this is the curve they thought we'd have to follow. And this is where we were at the end of 2008. And then this is a projected for 2009, I forget what it was. But for 2012, which is here, we installed 13 gigawatts. So if you, and I can't see very well on the graph over there, but if you imagine that 13 gigawatt line extended back to 2012, we're ahead of the curve at the moment. And that is a big if. The curve assumes a growth of 38% in demand between now and then. And that doesn't have to happen, which would make it even better. Okay. In that same study, DOE figured out it would cost 2% more than maintaining the status quo to make 20% of our energy come from wind. Okay. If we do that same amount of generation but cut our demand, then we get close to what I'm dreaming about. This graph, this postulated splits, is wrong because nobody anticipated that the price of gas would get so cheap. So already the cost of the split between wind and between coal and natural gas has changed drastically. Okay. If we did that, just 20% wind
And in fact, like I said, it'd be even better if we could lower demand at the same time. We would drastically reduce carbon dioxide emissions. We would hold greenhouse gas emissions from the electricity sector flat through 2030. That means it doesn't get any better. That's one of the, well, any worse, one of the eight wedges that the IPCC projects. We would, this says, displace 50% of natural gas and 18% of coal. You can probably switch those numbers. And a big one for those of us who live out west where it apparently isn't ever going to rain again, we reduce water consumption because wind doesn't need to make steam. It doesn't need water. So it doesn't use water that isn't there. PV, price trends. Since 1998, the price of photovoltaics has been falling. The lower line, lower orange line, is the cost of the panels. The upper, or I suppose the lower line is kind of reddish, the upper yellow line is the total system cost. And this is in dollars per installed watt. And while wind, solar, is about twice the cost of wholesale electricity, in the expensive parts of the country, it's less than the cost of retail electricity. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for utilities unless somebody's twisting their arm. It makes a lot of sense for individuals. The electricity off your PV panels is at or below the cost you would pay to buy the electricity from the utility. And as I said, that is mostly from this overproduction of PV by wind, by China. It's felt that the prices will rise, but not much. Of panels, and it's strongly felt that the price to install should go down because we pay in the U.S. about twice the price of electricity of installation in Germany. So, and their labor must cost more, so there must be, it must be possible to get that price down. Okay, capacity additions. Prior to 2007, there wasn't enough functioning PV in the country to count. So it has really soared in the last couple of years as a consequence of the plummeting price of panels, the requirements on states for carve-outs, and they're just a whole lot cheaper. So it's also very attractive to utilities because they generate when you need them. When the sun shines, it's hot, so you want to run electricity. So it works nicely. Okay, we're not cost competitive at utility scale. But it does compete at retail prices. And it's not likely that the change in price will be all that big. Geothermal heat pumps are really a conservation measure. This is for individual houses. We're not making electricity here. We're displacing electricity. You put one of these things in and you don't need your air conditioner or your electric heater. Costs run $4,000 to $6,000 a ton. I don't know what a ton is, so $12,000 to $24,000 per house, roughly, depending on the size of the house, really. Decrease your utility costs by 50% or so. So if we're going to say we want to cut our electricity costs by 50%, but I still want to live like a modern Western person and not like somebody in Indonesia, that might be something worth asking, whether that's really necessary. But if I don't want to change my lifestyle, this is one way to keep living that way and still cut our energy use by 50%. This is the overall price index. The dark lines are now and the light lines are then in 2030. And IRENA is the International Renewable Energy Agency, I think. It's sort of the equivalent of the IPCC. It's an independent intergovernmental panel asked to look at renewable energy generation. So what you're seeing is the potential for the change in cost relative to the gray window, the wholesale cost of electricity. Okay. So can we fit into that window? And the first one here is wind. It's already there. This is PV. It's not really going to get there. Well, it's not just PV. It's other kinds of solar. It's not really going to get wholesale, but it will be retail. The next one is biogas, that green one. And then we've got hydropower. Obviously, that's already there. And the last one is geothermal. And that's geothermal for electricity, which is also already So what do we do? There is a certification, a stamp, that you can see on some products that says they're wind made. You've probably also, on occasion when you buy airplane tickets, had the option to add a couple of dollars to offset your carbon footprint. That money goes directly to wind farms, usually, but it could also go to PV plants to offset, balance out the generation. Are you willing to pay a little more? That's the increase in utility costs. Get your home, get your church audited. Get out last year's electricity bills. Find out what 50% means. Install a sustainable clothes dryer. I read an article a few years ago that said that, oddly, they were finding the Chinese were resistant to buying electric clothes dryers. They insisted on hanging their clothes outside, and this was just terrible. Why? A whole lot healthier. UV, you know, kill all the germs. Sweet. Excellent. Check out whether PV or solar hot water works on your roof. Get a geothermal heat pump. If you're building a new house and you don't do geothermal, I'd say you're kind of out of the range of proper stewardship. Talk to each other. Take these slides home and start bothering people. Make us think. Okay. And there's a list. This is not by any means a complete list of potential websites for help. Okay? That's it.
One of the questions I've heard raised about wind power issues is that you can't do wind power everywhere, so there's either an energy storage issue or energy transportation issue. Can you make a comment about that?
Yeah, there's two things. One is if we get to 20 to 30 or maybe even 50% wind, there is adequate capacity in the transmission to simply move wind where it's needed. You're from Texas, which is a whole other country. You maybe don't count. You can't move electricity out of Texas or into Texas. Sorry, it's a whole different grid. But everywhere else, we can. So if it's windy in Kansas, but it's not windy in Ohio, we can use the wind from Kansas to move to Ohio. That's...
Okay. What about smart grid and load balancing? How much energy savings, conservation can we get?
I honestly don't know. It's a good question. Smart grid has got... It's a catchphrase that most of us think really doesn't mean anything yet. But, the kinds of things that... If I could, for instance, when I buy my electric car, tell it to start charging at 3 a.m., but charge at a low rate and climb slowly over an hour so the utility doesn't see a surge, and then turn off to make sure it's full before 7 so I can get out before I go to work, that kind of thing... You can do the same thing with dishwashers, would be valuable because it balances out load when the sun shines or when the wind blows over against other things.
So how much or what percentage of power is lost in transmission, and what has been done recently and will be done in the near future to lower that percentage?
That generally gets a really bad rap, but honestly, for any given transmission line, if the loss is more than 10%, it's a really bad transmission line. I mean, I don't even think FERC would let you build something that bad. So it's not that bad, it's just that we have a lot of transmission. One of the things that's being done is some construction of DC lines to move wind east or west from the wind belt. And DC, you can make the voltage higher, the current's lower, you get even less loss. So...